Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. We begin the hour with retired Brigadier General Robert Benson. You can hear him speak about his more than 30-year career with the South Dakota National Guard this weekend as part of the South Dakota Veterans Forum. That's 9 a.m. to 11 Mountain Time at the South Dakota Air and Space Museum. General Benson joins us now from Mitchell, South Dakota. Welcome, sir.
Well, I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
I'm wondering what originally brought you to the National Guard. Let's go back more than 30 years and talk about some of those first conversations you had with your family and with yourself about serving.
Well, I was I got married in 65 in September, and by the time I got back with my honeymoon, of course, I had my draft notice to take my physical, and so I originally looked into being a pilot. But that was going to be 5 years, 4 to 5 years, and so then I just decided that I would, you know, maybe join the National Guard, as a lot of my friends had. And of course, when I went and saw the warrant officer, he said, "It's impossible, we're over, and you're on a long waiting list." And by golly, in December he called me back and said that the list had moved and I could get in, so that's how I joined the National Guard.
And what sort of job did you have in the very beginning then?
Well, I was just a buck private. We were in a medical unit, and so I did all the things that buck privates do. I didn't go to OCS till 69 when I graduated.
So I want to kind of get at the heart of just really how much the National Guard has changed over the years. So let's just talk a little bit about 1965 and what was the role of the State National Guard at that time?
Well, I suppose the role was the same, but, you know, from my perspective, it took me over a year to even go to basic training. And, of course, the feeling was then that they were going to mobilize the Guard for Vietnam, which they didn't. And I knew that after I had to wait over a year to even get the basic training, that they probably weren't going to be mobilized. And also, the unit I was in had 6 months to train up to prepare for war, where they were drafting kids, and in 5 months they were in Vietnam. So, you know, you didn't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out that the Guard was not going to go over there, and they didn't. You know, there was a few thousand went, but so, you know, that was my era of a war, and so I've always had this little black cloud over my head because I didn't serve in Vietnam, and I still have it today, and probably that's why I stayed around so long to get a second chance, but it had all changed, you know, in 20 years later. So I still have that little black cloud.
What do you mean by that, a black cloud still today, all that you've done, after 30 years of serving? And, you know, we'll get to Operation Desert Storm in a little bit. But, you know, why at your age do you look at that and think you have a black cloud?
Well, because it was my generation that went to Vietnam. And, you know, I mean, many, many, many millions of young men went, and ladies, and, you know, and I didn't, and so that's why I have this. I don't dwell on it, but, you know, I just have always felt that I should have been there. That's why I have the little black cloud.
Let's talk about the decision to go to OCS then and to stay and make it into more of a career. What inspired you to think that was a career path? Was that unexpected for you? Were you kind of trying it out as a young man to see if it would be long term?
Well, unfortunately, you know, when I went to college, you had to take 2 years of ROTC. I never even thought about the military, and then so I didn't take advanced ROTC, a huge mistake, as you can figure out. But, you know, then I was encouraged by others to go to OCS, and so that's what I did. And I was in a medical unit to start with, and then I after OCS, then I went back to that unit. But as high as I could go in that unit was the rank of captain. So in a few years, I started working on the engineer branch, and so that's where I finally transferred to and 78, and then that's when the ranks started coming and more assignments, and so. But anyway, that's how it all evolved.
So more than 30 years, what are some of the things within the state of South Dakota, other than deploying, but just within the state that you know your unit had to respond to, or what stands out?
Well, probably for me personally, I was a pretty new lieutenant when the Rapid City flood hit, and I was there at the time that it hit, and I was working with Dr. Robert Hayes, who is one of my heroes. He was such a leader in the whole medical field in South Dakota, and so, you know, that really sticks out in my mind that I was there when that thing hit. And, you know, that was definitely the highlight, you know, even though there was a lot of training exercises over the years. But that was the highlight until actually Desert Shield, Desert Storm.
Well, let's jump forward then to Desert Shield, Desert Storm. This is the late 80s, early 90s, and that becomes part of the national conversation. A very different experience than Vietnam in a number of different ways. Where do you want to begin about the National Guard's changing role during that time?
Well, the thing, you know, under my command, I had a 3rd Active Army, a 3rd Army Reserve, and a 3rd National Guard units from battalion down to company levels. And you know, you always assume that the active army is better trained, but what I found out is they have such a high turnover in each unit that my best units, of course, were National Guard and Army Reserve, because they stay in the same unit for several years and they have a camaraderie that the active doesn't have. But I think that the biggest thing that we probably accomplished was changing the image that I talked about during the Vietnam War, when we were called everything probably accurate, but we were the first to be mobilized since the Korean War. And so when the National Guard units performed so well, and now they've just been redeployed numerous times, I think that we had a part of changing that image, and that's just one thing that I'm proud of, because now the National Guard nationwide is held in high esteem, and so I think we started that process, and it's continued ever since.
What was the mood of the people in the unit at the time when getting ready to deploy? Because it was a long deployment, and it was new in some ways. Many of those younger kids didn't join thinking they were going to deploy.
Right. And you know, for myself, having been around so many years, I'd been to numerous exercises, and you know, you worry about your troops and make sure they are going to come back alive. That's your first thought. You worry about your family, and everybody went through that unknown thing. And of course, being there, getting top secret briefings every day, I knew what was going on, but of course my family didn't. So it's a lot harder on the people left behind than it is on the people that are actually deployed. And so, you know, all the families were very apprehensive, and you know, it was just the unknown, and then the fact that nobody had been mobilized in 40 years. When you got your mobilization station, it was kind of chaotic, and it wasn't well organized, and we were supposed to leave in a few days once we got to Fort Carson, and then they changed it, and we were stuck there another 35 days, and so it's just things just you know, I've gotten better now, but they were just new out of the chute, and nobody knew how to do it. So We kind of walked through all that and finally ironed out a bunch of it.
Did you have a sense then that you were helping create the model for the future as well?
No, I didn't have that sense then. I was more concerned about my capabilities and did I have what it takes to lead. I knew my missions, what we were going to be doing. I knew we were going to be in the combat area. I had talked to my higher headquarters, which came out of Germany, But then when they deployed, I couldn't talk to them for about 30 days. And so the missions changed once I finally got there. But you know, we didn't have a sense that we were changing history. It was more that I was concerned about, you know, the soldiers, who I would get. I didn't know my task force at that time. I was just hoping I was up to the challenge and hoping that all the exercise I'd been to had proven worthwhile, which they did.
And what rank were you at this point?
I was a full bird colonel at this rank.
So will you allow me to say that a full bird colonel having doubts about whether he has what it takes would be a surprise to some of the, you know, privates or specialists below you? Did you have to contain that and not really show that you were wondering those things too? Or did you have...
Oh, yeah, of course. Nobody ever saw that. But
right. When
I got in theater and we'd moved a couple times, I went to the Corps commander's meeting with my command sergeant major, Paul Meckling, who was a great one. But anyway, as we went to this, everybody in there was active component almost, and so all the division commanders and the brigade commanders and all these people were... They knew each other because they were all active Army. And over in the corner, I saw another guy standing with his sergeant major. And I told Polly, I said, you know, that guy's a National Guardsman. And you know, we didn't know anybody. And I said, you know, the only way we're going to be equal with these people is that we outperform them. Mm-hmm. I said, so that is our goal, that we outperform all these colonels and generals in here. And then we will be equal. And so that's basically what my staff and my units did over there. I mean, we never were late on a mission. And of course, when the ground war was over, we got reassigned to the rear, and we became the engineer headquarters over there, and I became the theater engineer. And so.
Wow.
It was just because they performed so well that we were selected. I didn't know it at the time because you don't know what other people have done. But then, of course, when they gave us the order, I wasn't a happy camper because they told me we were going to be there 13 more months. And
yeah. And
so, anyway, you know, things changed so fast we thought we were going home because President Bush said combat units out first, and we were a combat unit, and we wound up getting sent to the rear, where those guys had a lot different than we did. They weren't living in the dust in the desert, but anyway, they picked us, and the unit we replaced went home to a nice parade in Chicago, and I was not very happy.
Was there a sense of state pride? You know, like you mentioned before, maybe people don't realize this sort of cohesion of the unit. Was that something that people sort of clinging to, that we were from South Dakota and that meant something?
Oh, without a doubt. You became very proud. Everybody had a wall drug sign. You know, how far it was to wall drug.
Sure.
So, you know, but there were two truck companies over there from South Dakota National Guard. And I got to meet their colonel commanders later on, and they called them the South Dakota Cowboys. And so one of them drove 1.1 million miles, and the other 970,000 miles, and the next truck company close to them was like 600,000 miles. And they would, you know, they had 60 trucks, so they'd get missions of 52 or 58 loads. And they would, they said sometimes they'd drug a truck in, but when they left, it was running. And so all the tough loads, the big loads, they gave to the South Dakota Cowboys.
Was it difficult to retire for you?
Yeah, it's, you know, next to my family, and I've been fortunate. I've got to do a lot of wonderful things in my life, and But next to my family, nothing has come close to give me the satisfaction that my military career did.
Yeah. What was coming home from Desert Storm like for the unit?
It was, we were late, you know, we were
right.
late coming home. So, of course, we never did get to see the yellow ribbons and all the things that I heard about. But it was absolutely wonderful. I mean, you know, to finally see your family again. And when we got off of the aircraft, I told the sergeant major, I said, we're going to be the last two people off of here. We want the troops to get to see their families first. So it was a feeling I'll never forget.
Retired Brigadier General Robert Benson, it's a great pleasure. I hope you'll come back and tell us more details and more stories in the future. But you can hear him speak about his more than 30-year career with the South Dakota National Guard this weekend. That's part of the South Dakota Veterans Forum. It's 9 a.m. to 11 Mountain Time at the South Dakota Air and Space Museum. We reached General Benson in Mitchell. Thank you so much, sir. We appreciate your service and your time today. Hopefully you'll come back again.
I will, thank you. I do have some really good stories I could tell you sometime.
I want to hear more of them. That is a promise. Right here on the list.
I'm very proud and honored to have worn the uniform. So,
well,
thank you very much.